It's showtime.
Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running for a brand new week, the second full week of June 2021. It is the 15th day of June. It is Moran Monday on... No, it's not. It's Titanic Tuesday. See what happens to me? Long weekends do that every time. It is Titanic Tuesday on the horn. I'm Robin, and I'm awfully glad to be back in the studio. Yesterday was good. We'll talk more about that in a little bit. And... I'm a bubble off plum in terms of what day of the week it is. I've screwed up the audio file dating, and I corrected my error, and we are good to go. Every program at the Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. So thanks go out to begin the program to our subscribers from the 15th, 14th, 13th, and 12th day of the month. That means, working backwards, that means thank you to Robert. Thank you so very kindly to Nagla. Thank you to Mike in Cascadia. Thank you to Scott in Wisconsin via his challenge of Friday night. Thank you, Scott. Thank you as well to Joey and Giraffe. Thank you to Ralphs. Thank you to Paul. Thank you to Matt in San Francisco. Thank you to Gary and Gaia in Oregon. Thank you to Rico and DeBerg. And thank you to Paul. And thank you to Gary. Thank you to a different Paul. Thank you. And thank you, all of you, for being part of the merry band, the merry little band that keeps this program going. So, like I said, it is Titanic Tuesday, the 15th of June. Yesterday was on me, so that doesn't contribute to the deficit. And what we were looking at, we almost finished fundraising for last week, but we had a $180 deficit, so $180 to finish Friday. And then, $480, something like that, I think, is the fundraising goal. And God, it would be fantastic if we could finish last week and get started. But we'll cross our fingers and hope for the best in that regard. And we got a couple of Joey's journals to get things started. Oh, by the way, if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that takes place when this program is live, the 3 hours from 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, we'll run over to headon.live and click on chat room, where you will be immediately greeted by early arrivers Anatole and Roger in Oregon and Squeaky and Stockton Larry, and capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a third stage guild navigator, had no problem today folding space to become man cave. And if it was anything as nice out there as it's been here today, today was perfect. Today was, almost the quintessential late spring day. Here, just before airtime, it began to sort of mist a little bit, but all day long it didn't get above 80. A nice little breeze, blue skies, just wonderful, just wonderful. And we get, now we apparently have a 50% chance of thunderstorms around 9 o'clock, but the program will be over then, so we don't have to run, worry about Chantel's internet running under the under the bed and hiding. That's always a win. Boy, I tell you what, we had a thunderstorm, though. Took out power, tree made me, on the little back road that I take along the gorge to get out to the highway, there was an entire oak tree. Gives you a sense of just how strong power lines can be. There was an entire oak tree that uprooted and just laid down across a power line, and, well, I drove under it and kind of goosed the accelerator a little bit, because it was creepy as hell is what that was. But the crews have been out working all over the place, and it was something, that storm. You know, I'm standing there on the front porch watching it, because it's just an amazing display of the power of nature. And Agnes, meanwhile, is saying, "Get back inside, you stupid girl." So that's how that was. But pop on over to the chat room if you'd like. It's going to be a rousing conversation, I'm sure, this evening. I can't. When last we spoke, I was talking about going to Pride in Beckley on Saturday, and we'll have to get to that, too. Been a busy weekend. Let's get things started the way... Oh, great. Thank you, Brother Deacon A. So the buffering has already started. Beautiful. I just love that. How inspiring. But, yeah. Thank you, Brother Deacon. Friday's first... Subject line, contact. Robin, this will be a short journal for Friday because Jeffrey and Joey are going to the dentist in about an hour. I didn't get this one on Friday. Oh, no. Here's Jeffrey. On this day in 1962, three Alcatraz prisoners escaped and were never seen again until they showed up in the movie Contact years later. As it turns out, the three fugitives were Larry King, Jay Leno, and Robert Novak. On this day in 1776, the Continental Congress formed a committee to draft a Declaration of Independence calling for freedom from Britain. Now the Congress is forming a committee on how to get away from Donald Trump before the Wild Wild West breaks out in the Congress, considering that before the Civil War, Congress often had spitting episodes, fistfights, knife fights, and shootings. Well, stay tuned, because with these Second Amendment gun nuts, who knows what kind of activity we'll have on the Hill. Trying to talk to these Republicans is like pulling teeth. Well, with 31 days now in June, there's still plenty of time for some violent contact in Congress. So please, don't delay. Please contact your congressperson and get in on the action. Thanks, Jeffrey. That was Joey's Journal for Friday, with Giraffe wondering if they can reopen Alcatraz for some of the nuts in Congress. But then, Monday march in West Virginia. Well, as many of you may have guessed, Jeffrey and I did make the trip down to West Virginia, and we're both glad we did. We were, however, frankly disappointed with the lack of attendance for such a serious moment in time, considering the ramifications of the power that Senator Jim Crow Joe Manchin wields in West Virginia. I'm guessing there were approximately 500 people, and most of us were very enthusiastic. The estimate from, local media was more like 200. There were several people from Ohio, Pennsylvania, Kentucky, and Michigan, which was heartening to see, but I was disappointed that more were not present to confront this pompous jackass that is Jim Crow Joe. And Jeffrey was nonplussed as well. Tickled me pink when I... Okay, pinker. And I got some more pink during the... Oh, it was hot. But when I saw them, and I was like, oh, yeah, well, how wonderful. Hi, Jeffrey. Hi, Joey. Speaking of confronting, Joey got in the face of a couple of Manchin minions who were attempting to block the path to the front door of Manchin's office, where the peaceful protesters were attempting to sign their names to a petition demanding that Manchin serve the will of the people in his state, with first and foremost being killing the filibuster and passing the For the People's Act. When the wonderful Reverend William Barber told those two staffers to get out of the way of the people, Joey jumped in their faces and yelled, "Get the hell out of the way! What's wrong with you? Shame on you for supporting and carrying water for Jim Crow Joe. You support a man who drives a Porsche, a car that's worth more than a lot of people's homes in this state. How do you sleep at night standing in the way of these good people? Shame on you." Reverend Barber, who was standing right in front of Joey, said, I think you said it all. I could not have stated it better myself. The Rev then looked at Joey and said, now go on. We have to keep it peaceful up in here. However, Joey had one parting shot for those approximately 20-year-old mansion minion staffers. What's the matter? Did his $100,000 Porsche break down and he couldn't make it in today? $100,000 Porsche? No. Only if he bought it used. Then the staffer sheepishly explained that Senator Manchin was in Washington with Congress still in session. Joey shot back, the only thing he's doing in Congress is obstructing the will of the people. He knew we were going to be here today, and the cowardly wonder you represent did not bother to show up. We were amazed at how involved the police were and how coordinated the march was as traffic came to a standstill during rush hour, and with that in mind, it was quite obvious that everybody from city officials to local television stations and media in general were well aware of this march on Manchin. Jeffrey has another note. I would have loved to have seen the white in Manchin's eyes when all these people showed up at his office. Yes, the white in Manchin's eyes would have been like looking at old Cotton-Eyed Joe. Speaking of Cotton, where was Heather Bresch, you know, Manchin's daughter, involved with Mylan, the pharmaceutical that promoted the old OxyContin that Rush Limbaugh used to use? Where's old Rushbo these days, anyway?
Well, you know, he's busy being dead.
Thank you, Jeffrey. I met Reverend William Barber in Los Angeles 4 years ago when he was hosting Greg Palast and Chris Hedges at an event in a huge church on the west side of town. Hedges was promoting his book, America, The Farewell Tour. Yesterday, when I first spotted Robin, I noticed she was wearing black, and also so was the Reverend. I could not help but wonder if we were attending a protest or a funeral for the end of democracy. We have a titanic struggle on our hands, and we need all hands on deck, so let's go, people. Get out and protest in any way you can, and let us save this country and our democracy. This has been Joey's Journal for Titanic Tuesday, the 15th day of June, with Giraffe, ready to fight the fascists anytime, anywhere. And there's a $25 Fight the Fascist challenge on the table, so that would get us down to only $130 to go to finish last week's fundraising. Thank you. Thank you very kindly, Joey and Giraffe. And yeah, working backwards, I went live on Facebook for a little while to carry Reverend Barber's initial remarks. He was amazing and inspiring, as he always is, and he spoke truth to power, and he spoke it plainly and with the moral force that only someone like him can bring. But Joey addressed the paucity of the crowd. And I kind of want to echo what Joey said, but that certainly is not on Reverend Barber. Reverend Barber brought brought national media. I had previously reached out to my contact at MSNBC and said, this is going to be a big deal, and you need to get Reverend Barber in there on the program. And that was inspiring to see. For my part, well, there was a lot of talk, and justifiably so, about the For the People Act. There was a profound banner that was spread out behind the speaker's platform, and it said, Joe Manchin, stop hurting West Virginia. And it's true. But for those of us who have been pushing Joe Manchin for as long as we have, you know, 2 decades, getting Joe to start, getting Joe to stop hurting West Virginia is a monumental task. Because he's ignored the death and the dying, the cancer, the birth defects, the heart disease, the pulmonary diseases, in the mountaintop removal sacrifice zone forever. And he's still doing it, okay? Let's be clear. He's still doing it. Still ignoring it. And so Joe Manchin Stop Hurting West Virginia it wasn't just a motto for a rally. It was a motto or a rallying cry for the entirety of his political career. It has been built on the idea of hurting people. And quite often, that is what a cynical transactional politics results in. Now, some of the speakers were better than others. And, you know, that's to be expected. But, and how to put this and do it charitably. There was talk about the $15 minimum wage and the For the People Act and ending voter suppression. And like I said, Reverend Barber had the facts and the history with him. You can hear it on the recording on my Facebook page. There was talk about ending the filibuster, infrastructure. I had no idea that Reverend Barber's grandfather, like my grandfather, was a coal miner. For all I know, maybe they mined coal together. One of the first integrated places below the Mason-Dixon line was the coal mine, because the United Mine Workers were founded from jump as an integrated union. But the problem lay, and there's plenty to go around in terms of causation, in the local organizing. And that's why there should have been thousands of people there. Magic Island Park on the banks of the Great Kanawha River should have been, it should have been elbow to elbow, packed in. But it was blazing hot, and there were a lot of older people, some younger. But who wasn't there, and what wasn't talked about? As far as I know, there were little to no people from affected communities in the sacrifice zone. There was no one from organized labor. There was only one, two, three, four, maybe, from the overall environmental community. And there was no one, obviously, from the LGBTQQIA+ community. I was a third or a fifth of the environmental community there. And as far as I knew, I was 100% of the LGBTQQIA+ community. And I'm only out 9 months. By the way, it's 9 months today, no cigarettes, winning. And that makes me, and that only happened because I was able to, my authentic self was able to quit smoking. My inauthentic self needed the cigarettes to prop up the inauthenticity. The outreach was bad. And if there's another one, I've already promised I will pitch in and do what I can to bring out anyone that I can. And thank you, Joey and Giraffe, for coming down all the way from Northern Ohio. Yeah, that kind of puts the shame to a lot of people who call themselves liberals, left, progressives in this state. You had a stuffed giraffe that can't even drive, making Joey chauffeur him down from the greater Cleveland area. But it reminds me of the line, the St. Crispin's Day line from that soliloquy in Henry V, where Henry V says, "Men abed now in England will count their manhoods cheap that they were not with us here on St. Crispin's Day." Felt a little like that. But there's, and I don't know what it's like in other parts of the country, because I spend almost all my time here. But 4 years of Trump very nearly wore out our protest urges. Or maybe it's not nationwide. Maybe there would have been a bigger crowd elsewhere. But in a and you've got to also take this into account too. In as maggoty a state as this is, maybe people don't care if they get to vote or not. Maybe they just don't care. We don't have to, there's, you know, we've got a stupid voter ID law. And of course, it operates disproportionately, as one veteran pointed out yesterday. It operates disproportionately on the disabled, on people who have a hard time driving, on people, on the aged, and people who don't have much money. That is all true, and it is all bad. But plain old apathy holds sway here too. I mean, for all I know, you know, they didn't show up to the rally because, well, I mean, maybe Judge Judy was on, or Judge Jeanine, or who knows. But the other thing, you know, I figured out early on there probably wouldn't be any mention of the environmental harm, the environmental justice angle. So I knew better than to think that there would be any mention of the AIC Act. It's not even out of the House yet, so it wasn't really part of the agenda. But the Equality Act is out of the House. The Equality Act is in the Senate. And there was no outreach. So, you know, if I hadn't heard about it, I wouldn't have been there. But I determined to be there because I wanted to be a witness to history and a participation in it. And this had the air of something historic about it. If he wants to, I think Reverend Barber can probably start some serious ruckus making here in West Virginia. And he called upon the assembled, and many of us knew that history. So many people in this state do not. Of the labor uprisings of 100 years ago, exactly 100 years ago, and talked about how his grandfather had stood up to the coal bosses, just as my grandfather and great-grandfather did, and so many grandfathers and grandmothers. Mother Jones walked these hills and hollers, raising hell, called at one point in time the most dangerous woman in the United States for what she was trying to do in simply getting workers treated like human beings. There was no want of profundity. It was the want, and there was no want of spoken truth. The want was for that which is referred to in the Gospels as ears to hear. Those who have ears to hear, let them hear. But the march procession strung out, probably a half a mile with the marchers. And I think the thing that bothered me most was that, like I said, the Equality Act is in the Senate. And by virtue of his determination to stand by a racist anachronism, a procedural trick in the Senate, instead of standing for the Constitution and honoring the oath that he took to uphold it, Joe Manchin is standing against everything that this country needs, and that's not exactly news. But there was no mention of the Equality Act whatsoever. And that and that affects one of the most marginalized communities in the United States. Because what is going on, and the, you know, they're such devils, the right wing. They fought civil rights for African Americans and lost. And they fought women's rights and won insofar as they stopped the Equal Rights Amendment. But they've largely lost that war, too. They have been fighting the people who would like to see their children and grandchildren go from 6 years old to 7 years old and not be stuck in a grave. They're losing that fight, too. They lost marriage equality. They are losing the larger war against the gay community. And so they are losing the war against, and these are their wars. They're not wars that were started against the right wing. They started them. They're losing their war largely against brown people from south of the Rio Grande. They've been called out for their anti-Muslim bigotry, filthy and vile as it is. And so they have to keep looking, because like the symbol of this nation, as I've mentioned before, the bald eagle, it never wants to fight anything its own size or that can fight back. And so the right wing in this country, eagle-like, picks on things smaller than it. All that money, all those 501c3s, all those tax exemptions. And that is why, in mostly recently concluded legislative sessions, that is why there was a record number of bills aimed at the trans community and aimed in particular at trans children, people who cannot even vote. And that's the way the right wing likes it. That's the way Republicans like it. If you can't fight back, you've got a target on your back. And so that marginalized community, went begging. And it made me profoundly sad. There was not one voice there raised in opposition to the fact that Joe Manchin is killing the Equality Act, too. There was no mention of the fact that we can't reauthorize the Violence Against Women Act, because the Republicans say, well, that includes trans people, and they'll go to the potty. Not a word. And I don't mean to sound bitter or like I'm picking at minutia, because their overall strategy, the right wing, is if they can pick off the smaller stripes in the rainbow flag, they will be empowered and emboldened to return for the others. I remember a couple of years ago, or within the last couple of years, Matt in San Francisco talking about how he feared and fears for his marriage. And there are couples all over the country in so fearing, because the right wing never ever ever lets up. They will always come back to attack people they think cannot fight back. They lost the marriage wars because the gay community did fight back and remains vigilant. And blessings upon organizations like the American Civil Liberties Union, fighting back against all these hateful, hateful, awful bills against a weak, marginalized minority community. But we always have to remember, they've got the bit in their teeth right now because they think they've got a compliant, fascist, right-wing, theocratic Supreme Court that will do anything they want. And they may be right. Now, going into 2022, maybe the Republicans have wised up enough to realize that this is not the time to relitigate Obergefell. But who knows? And they are so close to fitting that small government inside the wombs of every woman in America that they can and we are halfway done. Well, it's the 15th, so we're and there's 31 days in June, so we're almost halfway done with June. And there's going to be a flurry of Supreme Court opinions in the next couple of weeks that are probably going to be harrowing and hair-raising. And with the court made up as it is, there is not much in the way of hope that any of these things will play out the way that A, they should, or B, that protects the constitutional rights of affected populations. And they'll hide behind things like, it is not the court's job to blah, 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 blah. And they always say that crap until they decide to do something that ain't the court's job, but they do it anyway because Jesus, or maybe because of campaign contributions. I heard a great line the other day, earlier today. The Koch brothers have bought a lot of property all over the world, but the biggest bargain they ever got was when they bought a mansion in West Virginia. Truer words have not been spoken. And I don't want to be misunderstood. Yesterday was profound. I just wish it could have been more and so much more. And maybe next time. Maybe next time. And it seems, God, it really does. It seems a month ago now, and it was only Saturday. But I got to go to my first Pride event. And it was so, so wonderful. And yesterday and Saturday were like opposite sides of a coin. And that coin is West Virginia. I came away from Saturday feeling better about the future of my state than I have in ages. And then that balloon got some air let out of it yesterday. I didn't know what to expect when I left for Beckley on Saturday. Got all gussied up. No, we're not using that term anymore. Got all glammed up. And lo and behold, when I got to what they call the intermodal gateway at in Beckley, it's basically a parking garage with a bus station under it. The entire plaza of the intermodal gateway was filled. You remember how last week I said I expected to wind up looking like a drowned rat because it was supposed to pour all day? Silly me, I forgot something. I forgot that if you check in with the people like, you know, Kenneth Copeland or Franklin Graham or James Dobson or Pastor John Starve Hagee. The LGBTQ community, and dead Jerry Falwell, who is standing side by side with Rush Limbaugh getting the reverse pineapple therapy for all eternity. You'll remember after 9/11, in conversation with Pat Robertson and between Pat Robertson and Jerry Falwell, they blamed 9/11 on the LGBTQ community and the secular liberals. Others had pointed out that hurricane. They tried to say the Hurricane Katrina happened because drag queens in New Orleans, when in fact the one part of the area that in that instance didn't flood was, well, the very gayest part of Bourbon Street. So I had forgotten that we are in charge of volcanoes, floods, tornadoes, hurricanes, rivers of blood, lakes of fire, and, of course, torrential downpours. In short, Saturday was beautiful. Not a cloud in the sky, not a raindrop, nothing. And it was hot. And there were so many people. I mean, Southern West Virginia, for God's sakes. I figured it would be amazing if there was, like, you know, 15 people in a good humor truck. But the people who organized Beckley Pride did a fantastic job. And there were hundreds of people. Probably outnumbered the crowd yesterday by 5-1. And there were vendors and performers and this huge drag show. Everybody walking around in rainbow gear. I had a magnificent time. People came up to me who've been following my transition on Facebook and were so kind. So kind. I got an opportunity to meet West Virginia's first elected trans woman. She's on, her name's Rosemary, and she's on the city council in Wheeling, and she is an absolutely wonderful human being. I got a cat in the studio. I don't know how this happens. Milling around in the crowd, a woman came by with a basket of stickers and said, "You want a sticker?" And I said, "Why, thank you." And I reached in and I took out the little heart sticker with the pink, white, blue of the trans pride flag, and I peeled it and stuck it on my dress. And she looked at me and said, "We need all the allies we can get." And I looked at her and said, "Oh, honey, I'm not an ally. I'm on the team." And she laughed and smiled. And I got just a thrill of happiness. One of the most lovely moments, as I was getting ready to go, I got a shrimp po' boy to take home to Agnes. And standing there, young girl approached me, introduced herself. I had been talking with her mama while we were waiting on our food. And we got to talking, and I couldn't tell if she was cis or trans. And she looked at me and said, "I can't tell if you're cis or trans." I said, "Oh, I'm trans, honey." She said, "Me too." And we began to talk and just had a fantastic conversation. And she told me her story, and I told her a little bit of mine. And it was such an inspiration. And it came, and I think, in a way, it's why I was so upset by the lack of visibility or acknowledgement that I saw yesterday. Because I'm no different than most people. things become much more real for me when I have a human connection to it, when it isn't esoteric or abstract. And so meeting her, the attacks on these children became so much more vicious, and the need to protect her and others like her and her, you know, her trans siblings, male to female, female to male, bi-gender, demisexual, non-binary, asexual, intersexual, became so much more important. And I'm grateful to have had that opportunity. But don't get me wrong, there was so much merriment and merrymaking. And I can't wait for my next one. And I got invited to the Lewisburg Pride, which is the last Saturday of this month, and I'm probably going to go. Not very far to Lewisburg. But it was a magnificent day from start to finish. And I want to thank everybody who made it so wonderful, and I want to thank everybody in the Horn Family Community Congregation who, I put some pictures up on social media, and everybody who responded so kindly, I want to thank and tell you that it meant the world to me, and that it is so helpful and so inspiring and so, well, so foundational. So thank you. So that's my weekend. What'd y'all do? Well, let's check in on some of the mail. Thank you, Jeremy. Jeremy, first right out of the gate, as is so often the case, and there's $15 to go on Joey and Giraffe's challenge. Thank you, Jeremy. Thank you very much. It means the world. Flavio says, so how was Moral Monday? Did you get to see Reverend Barber? Yes. Was this your first Moral Monday? Yes. How was Charleston? Charleston was hot. Flavio observes, not a big crowd, but you can feel the solidarity. Yeah, and you know how it was important? Because last night on MSNBC, on Lawrence O'Donnell's program, they brought on a former communications guy for Joe Manchin, and the blathering right winger who does mornings on a statewide network. They brought them on to talk about how little what Reverend Barber did mattered. Oh, well, said Hoppy Kirchival. Oh, well, it wasn't that big a deal. People in West Virginia aren't worried about their right to vote. Yeah, we are. I know I am. If I don't get all my paperwork done, there's every chance in the world they're gonna challenge my vote, even though I've voted in every election since we've lived here. And so I'm plenty worried about it. And I wonder what would happen if people were inspired enough to go out and vote. And the poll numbers that kept getting mentioned are so true. I mean, 70-something percent of Republicans want the For the People Act. 81% of independents, 89% of Democrats. Well, it just goes to show you. Money talks louder than the will of the people. Because, you know, when that sweet, 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 sweet check from the United States Chamber of Commerce clears, and you can go and price the white Porsches, Now, that'll take the sting out of being yelled at by a bunch of hillbillies. It for sure will. Price check, says Lee in New York. I wanted to see what a Porsche costs. A Porsche 718 Cayman runs $60,500 to $87,400, manufacturer's suggested retail price, if you can live with the cheap model. And the Cayman itself is the downgrade model. I don't think Joe's toddling around in a Cayman. My best guess is that thing was a... a high-end 911. And it costs more than any $100,000. Because Joe ain't going to have no stripped down 911 with the, you know... without all the bells and whistles. Oh, no. No. But, you know, I'm not going to beat him up for the Porsche. I've owned a couple of used Porsches in my life. It is a two-syllable word, by the way. I didn't buy mine new off the showroom. I bought mine with 60, 70,000 miles on them. And that was many and many a year ago in a former life. But I think it's not a good look if you want to be a man of the people. Of course, I don't think there's any evidence out there that Joe Manchin wants to be a man of the people. Yeah, he wouldn't be doing what he's doing if he wanted to be a man of the people. He wants to be a man of the United States Chamber of Commerce. Oh, and by the way, as I had to go out this morning, and I checked in because I just couldn't resist catnip. And I checked in on Hoppy Kirchival's morning program, where he said that the left, what left? The left is, and this was the word he used, obsessed with the For the People Act. And I thought that an odd choice of words, obsessed. It makes it sound like maybe it's psychopathological. Like it might be something you could chart out on one of the axes of the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, 5th edition. Obsessed. Of course, I might choose a different word, like patriotic. Because voting is patriotic, and being able to vote is the essence of the patriotic process. And wanting everybody to be able to vote, who's eligible to vote, that seems pretty patriotic, too. Unless, of course, you are a white nationalist rump party that can only maintain power by making sure that people don't vote, or that they vote in House districts where their vote is so watered down that you can never even get rid of the biggest morons in the House. Your Lauren Bobblehead Boobert, Clanny Oakleys, and Marjorie Trader Gangrene Cucumbers, and your Louis Asparagus Gomerts and the like. Maybe that's it. But it is true. Joe was toddling around in a car that was worth more than the homes of most of the people in his state, me included. But you know, they're always going to be that way. It's a way of reminding us in a not too subtle fashion that they've got theirs, and fuck us, Igum foo. I got mine. You. And so it's, you know, the, no. Oh, that's it. That's what it would know. Hoppy said that the left is obsessed. The progressives are obsessed with dragging Joe Manchin to the left. And folks, he's just not going to go there. You know, because it's such a leftist thing to want a child not to go hungry.
It's such a leftist thing to want an interstate bridge not to collapse with, you know, a couple of hundred cars passing over it. God damn, it's bomb-throwing Bolshevism to want everybody to be able to go to the doctor when they're sick. Yeah, we all get up every morning and we whistle a few merry measures of the Internationale, and we go out screaming, "Workers of the world, unite! You have nothing to lose but your chains." As we head to the tractor factory. God Almighty! And the people who gruntingly respond again, that may have something to do with the lack of turnout. People don't want it. People don't want to be free. God damn it, Moses, we had three hots and a cot under Pharaoh back in Egypt. Now here we are out in the desert eating some sort of marshmallow fluff that falls on the ground every day. Do you know how boring that gets? Yeah. What's that? Randy in PA says, let's make mommy into a slave, too. It used to be that only one income was sufficient in order to support a family. And the last time that that was a fact in America was the administration of Jimmy Carter. Jimmy Carter, that sissy liberal pinko panty waist communist Rosicrucian Illuminati. See, that's what you get when you have a nuclear scientist for a president, not a failed racist game show host. Yeah. But that's true, Randy. But this is also not to say that for some reason or another, there's sort of inherent in that some notion that women were happier when they weren't in the workforce. Work provides meaning. Boss Man Wayne so frequently has said to me over the years, there is dignity in work. And he's right. Now stop it, Robin, says Arthur. You know these culture wars are wars of liberal gay force and aggression. Yeah. Now they're ramming their gayness down our throats. Yeah, I'm fully well aware that this is Titanic Tuesday, and we got some Titanic intellect out there. Ooh, have I got a great example. And Flavio says, this isn't worrying. Yes, this is worrying. In April, and this is from the Washington Post, in April, a report by three nonprofit organizations documented how Republicans in dozens of state legislatures were pursuing a strategy to politicize, criminalize, and interfere in election administration. Quote, now less than 2 months later, this Democracy in Crisis report has an update, and it is alarming. The number of bills raising red flags has grown from 148 in 36 states to 216 in 41 states. And 24 of them have become law.
Oh, but it's just about making sure people show their ID when they vote. I mean, you got to have an ID to do everything else. Why shouldn't you have to show an ID to vote?
Yeah, that ain't quite how they work. And criminalizing souls to the polls. Criminalizing giving someone a bottle of water. That has nothing to do with showing an ID when you vote. Steve in New York asking, the demonstration yesterday, I wonder, could COVID be a part of it? It could. Could it be that unions weren't there out of fear of reprisal from Manchin, or they support Manchin? Both are possible. As far as voting rights and the For the People Act, I've wondered why people don't seem to be as up in arms about the voter epidemic of voter elimination laws, even when people know how bad these laws are and that For the People Act would have seriously undermined those voter elimination laws. That's made me wonder if the reason people aren't is because an awful lot of people just think it can't happen here. They wouldn't overturn elections. They wouldn't actually keep people from voting. I don't know how they could think that, Steve, because it's happened twice in this century.
three if you count 2004. But damn sure in 2000 and in 2016, an election was overturned because the person who got the popular votes, who won the most votes, did not get to be president. Caesar socks. Hush. Let's see. Moving on from Steve says, I do think Trump and COVID fatigue and economic uncertainty are factors that have exhausted people to a degree we haven't seen in many years. I can only speak for myself when I say that Trump, etc., has given me an amount of mental and spiritual exhaustion I haven't experienced in a long while. But I do wonder if that is a big part of the apparent political indifference fatigue that is descending upon us. On a more macro note, I will admit that the right wing does have more energy than we do. You want to know what I think the reason is? I think on our side, it's about building communities, bringing people into the fold, lifting people up. It's about showing charity and love for one another and working to turn down the anger of our nation and add more peace to the body politic and the world. However, on the right, as I perceive it, the motivation is anger, hatred, and division. It's about us versus them, dividing people, excluding people, making sure those people, whoever the those du jour are, don't get to participate fully. Let's be honest here. Anger, division, and hatred have much more energy, endurance, and intensity. They prepare a person for more for battle and conflict. Charity, peace, and love, while perhaps as intense, just don't have the potential and kinetic energy. And, you know, that's how you wind up with the guy hollering about the peace and the love, you know, the peace, love, and understanding winds up, you know, nailed right in. Because that is terrifying to an authoritarian system of governance, whether it be 2,000 years ago or day after tomorrow. Sorry about the little silence there. Say hi, honey.
Hi, honey.
Thank you.
You're most welcome.
Thanks for coming and getting the cat.
No problem. I'm on it.
In this case, it was about the cat.
It was definitely about the cat, and that's why I'm your personal assistant.
Yeah, that's it. Personal assistant. That's the Viking warrior princess. You heard there. Ms. Agnes. Found out something about her today that I did not know before. Agnes got a 23andMe kit. I haven't done it yet. But she got a 23andMe kit and she got her results back. Hi, Agnes, says Lee in New York. And she was astounded. Now, you may note that for years and years now, we have referred to Agnes as the Viking warrior pharaoh princess. And I figured it was a lead pipe cinch that the Viking part was going to be proven. And it was. Oh, it was proven. She's so northern and northern European and northwestern European. But I'll be damned if I, you know, because I was the one that added the pharaoh part to the Viking warrior princess. Sister Carol Baker originally named her the Viking warrior princess. But I added Pharaoh to it, so she's the VWPP, the Viking Warrior Pharaoh Princess. Well, according to the results she got back, she by God is. Just tickled me pink. Because she is 2% Coptic Egyptian. No shit, she really is. Which I just find magnificent. Oh, there's some German and there's some Irish and there's some English. And
lots and lots and lots of Nordic stock. But somewhere along the way, and I have a theory. I know where that Coptic Egyptian comes from. Because once upon a time, the island of Britain was a crossroads of world culture as they knew it at the time. And at one point in time, we know from the archaeological record that there was a significant number of legionnaires from the from the Eastern Mediterranean and Southern Mediterranean in the legions in Roman Britain. So some Egyptian legionnaire was posted to Great Britain and did what soldiers far, far from home often do, and that is hook up with the locals. And out of that comes one strand of a line that results in the beauty and magnificence that is Agnes. And she's also about 0.5% indigenous American. I'm so damn jealous. I'm about halfway afraid to do my genetic trace just because I'm going to come back white, 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 white. Just boring, 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 boring white. Oof. And who's to say? Who's to say that Egyptian legionnaire really wasn't the by then 2,000 years distance ancestor of a pharaoh from the glory days that was the land of Chem? The Greeks gave it the name Egypt. They called it the land of Chem, K-E-M. ID, says Lee in New York. You need an ID to buy groceries. The former guy. Yeah. Yesterday was, I suppose, his birthday. He's 75 now. And the tweet of God, God had a little something to say. No tweeting yesterday. 75 years ago today, I really dropped the ball. Truth. Yeah, Flavio, the criminalizing of water bottles is but a minor detail, but it is a major indication of just how far they're willing to go. The laws being enacted across the states make the counting of the votes by partisans the rule and the running of elections by partisan hacks. So if they don't like the result of an election, they throw it out. You're going to see that. And the thing is, the law moves so slowly, Fabio, that the courts will not be able to act in time to save the tattered remnants of what is laughingly referred to all across this country as our democracy. You know, the democracy that has always been far more aspirational than operational. Oh, and thank you to an anonymous friend. There's $100 on the table, meaning there's $115 of total challenges, which is huge and would wipe out the remainder of last week and get us started on this week. Like I said, I didn't include yesterday because I didn't come to work. I was down in Charleston. I was working, but not the same. So it would go a long way. The when Manchin chooses, you loses challenge. Ain't that the damn truth, our anonymous friend? So there's $115 out there. That'd get us $230 out of the $480 or so that we need to raise. Thank you so very kindly for that challenge. Please don't leave it lying on the table. Laying on the table. I don't want to get in trouble with Steve. He's become maximum dictator for life of the art of word knowing. Oh. Lamar the Magnificent says, oh, please, may I sit down? I'm wondering if you see what I see when the Republicans don't want you to have something. They say it's what the Dems want, having well-trained their followers. It works. They vote against their best interest. And on the subject of all you have to lose is your chains, no, it's all you have to lose is your way of life or your life itself. And true. But hollering, workers of the world, unite, you have nothing to lose but your chains is a great way to get people into the throng. You could probably say that, Arthur. Agnes is a cat burglar now. No, I think she's more like a cat cop. She keeps them, she comes and apprehends them when they themselves burgle the studio. Jack in Shreveport says, right-wing intensity. The negativism used by the right wing has more energy in the short run, but positivity wins in the long run. I forgot the exact phrasing and source of that, but that's the gist of it. I think it's that high energy negativity kind of burns out after a while, or that people find out that it's of no help in the long run. I want to agree, but here's the trick, Jack. You come out with it, because we've talked about the outrage du jour of the right wing. If they sense that the people are beginning to wear out on an issue, they'll invent a new one, and that'll be the issue that's killing America, and America could be great if only America could deal with those people. And yeah, Darlene, I thought the same thing. Someone asked if you were cis or trans. That means your transition is going extremely well, Robin. You're rocking that feminine thing pretty well. I should have made you so happy. It did. There were a couple of happy tears. More than a couple. And Jesus, why didn't somebody tell me that eye makeup stings real bad when you sweat it into your eyes or cry? Holy shit, what do they make that stuff out of? Hydrofluoric acid? Damn. Eyes got all red and burnt and looked like I'd been on a 4-day bender. Hadn't. But it sure looked like. I mean, I looked up in the rearview mirror and went, damn, if I get pulled over, I'm screwed. Subject's eyes were red and glassy. Bub, have you ever had Maybelline run into your eyes? Yeah, I didn't think so. Here, try mine. Ow, that hurts! Yeah, and they're red and glassy too, pal. Yeah, and I got mammed yesterday when I was went to get a bite of dinner after the rally, and there was nothing ironic about it. I crossed the great restroom divide. Didn't get any hell. And the sweetest thing happened as I was leaving Charleston. I had the window rolled down, and you'd have to know Charleston, but I was going down Capitol Street, and it where it intersects with Lee Street, you turn right to get out to the interstate. And so the light was red, and it was on the corner right by Graziano's Pizza, and there was a little three-year-old about the same age as my little granddaughter here. Oh, she was so brave. She had her first trip to the dentist today. And had the window rolled down, and the little girl on the corner started jumping up and down and yelling, hi, 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 and started blowing kisses at me. Well, when a three-year-old blows kisses at you, you blow kisses back. And you say hi back. And her mother was standing there with her, and she said, she never blows kisses at anybody. And I said, well, then I am honored. And the light turned green. And as I drove away, she hollered, bye-bye, pretty lady. Bye-bye. And I yelled, bye-bye. And beautiful moment. Darlene continues and says, you have to understand, I've looked at you and thought of you as a cis male for so many years. And although I'm seeing your transformation, it's still through that initial lens as I continue to recalibrate to the real you. However, it sounds like people who don't know you when they meet you see you as female. That's fascinating and reminds me of Juanita questioning when she last called in who you were several times before because your voice has changed so much. She didn't recognize you. As a longtime dedicated listener and supporter, I'm more or less kind of like the frog in the slowly boiling water, and I'm learning so much. Well, Darlene, we're learning together. We all are. You know, one of the things that occurred to me is that, and it's you know, when you're in a situation like this, you learn. If you're doing this and you're not learning, you're doing it wrong. And I am learning so very much. And I had a little epiphany today. And that is, in my situation, when people begin to see you, when you show the world who you authentically are, other people will show you who they authentically are too. Oftentimes that's beautiful, but it is not guaranteed so to be. And sometimes the people who show you who they really are turn out to be really awful. And sometimes that is monumentally hurtful. And I experienced some of that. But it's okay. No one is going to steal my authenticity. And no one is going to steal my joy. But for them, on balance, it is well over 95% wonderful. I don't like thinking of you as a frog in slowly boiling water, Darlene. But thank you. You've been so kind all along, and I do appreciate it. And this whole community has been for the most part. And it's lovely. Let's see. 23andMe. 23 and not me. Lee in New York says, I tried it. They couldn't find enough DNA. Thought I was more human than that. Oh, and by the way, Agnes is more Neanderthal than 89% of 23andMe respondents, and I think that's awesome, too. It's not 89% Neanderthal. It's 89% more Neanderthal, which is still a teeny, tiny, little itsy-bitsy fragment of a piece of the genome. But she's 89% more Neanderthal than 83. Sorry, honey. Don't make me more Neanderthal than I already am. it works for her. No, you're a Viking warrior pharaoh princess, not a cave woman. Now quit it, Og. Ag. Maybe the ag. Mm-hmm. couldn't find enough DNA. I'm worried, Lee. Could it be all the years with the computers? Have you been assimilated, Lee? The Borg may have more DNA. Never mind. Steve says, you're 23andMe. Given what you said about your propensity for skin burns from the refrigerator light, I'm going to say you have snowwoman, damn it, DNA in you. Yeah, it's possible. Makes perfect sense. Those ancestries will always surprise you, says Megan. I thought I was all white, too, until I did Ancestry.com. Guess who's 23% Ashkenazi Jewish? Yours truly. Guess who has ancestors in Ukraine, Lithuania, Latvia, Belarus in the last 100 years? That's right, me. Don't think you already know. If you can swing it, do it, and I probably will. I'm probably going to do it at some point, but damn, it's expensive. Meanwhile, Balmer Bob says, your gourmet tastes in food suggest you may be somewhat Italian. I understand Roman sentries often stayed past Hadrian's Wall. What's that old Pink Floyd song? Several species of small furry animals grooving in a cave with a Pict. That's it. Yep. A legionnaire getting it on with a Pictish woman. Agnes is kind of pixie-ish. You know, it's odd you would say that, Bob, because I used to sort of fantasize that. And this came up when I went to Italy for my spring break trip back in like 10th grade. That, you know, maybe somewhere along the way, because I felt very Italian in Italy. And I thought maybe some legionnaire had, you know, jumped the fence, as it were. Because really, Roman Britain was a crossroads. People from all over the world. And that's why among other things, the Oxford Don, Mary Beard, has taken so much shit from right-wing white supremacists in Great Britain for suggesting that Britain ain't no white country and never has been. Hell, there was massive amounts of migration back and forth from Great Britain to the European mainland before Julius Caesar ever even got there. Because the Celtic culture was a huge trade network all over Europe and down into the Middle East. It's kind of like being on an archaeological dig in West Tennessee and finding a sheet mica mirror that you know came from the Great Lakes, or hand-hammered copper engraved, what would you call it? It's not a sculpture. It's two-dimensional. But you can look up the Birdman of Etowah Mounds. Yeah, that's in North Georgia. And it came from, the copper for that came from Upper Michigan. And what would become Anishinaabe culture. Thank you very kindly to Alma. Alma just took out the remainder of Joey's and Giraffe's challenge, and as well knocked down our anonymous When Joe Manchin Chooses You Loses challenge by some, well, got it down to $65 to go. Thank you, Alma. Thank you so, so very much. And so if the rest of that 65 comes in, then where are we? That would be 230 left to go to catch up and be even. Thank you. Truth. Stephen, New York, says, correction, if you aren't learning, you aren't living. Stop Neanderthal shaming, Robin. I wasn't shaming. I think it's cool. Megan says, Robin, you need Maybelline Great Lash Waterproof Mascara. You'll need cold cream or baby oil to get it off, but it's worth it. By the way, if you don't mind me asking, are you noticing a difference between how people treat you when you were male versus now as female? If so, what was it? I'm now being overtalked. I have been mansplained. I have also had the door held for me. Relationships are different. That's just a couple of them. Right now I'm using, Megan, right now I'm using a mascara called Better Than Sex. I wouldn't know. But it seems it's really, really good, and they make a waterproof in that, too. But damn, it stings. But I guess that's part of the curse. You know, it's one of the curses of summer, and I'm not going to complain about summer. And it turns out, as Don in British Prince George, British Columbia, lets us know, that, and this is from the CBC, not the CDC, CBC, Canadian Broadcast Corporation. Alberta's COVID-19 vaccination rates, and remember, Alberta is the West Virginia of Canada. Alberta's COVID, I mean, we fuck up our mountains, but Jesus Christ, what they've done to the tar sands, oh God. Researchers, Alberta's COVID-19 vaccination rates tied to levels of formal education, data shows. Researchers say correlation can help guide efforts to immunize more people. An analysis of COVID-19 vaccination rates in Alberta suggests one socioeconomic factor in particular is correlated to vaccine uptake, and it ain't income, language, or cultural barriers, it's education. They said isn't. It's not income. I said ain't, because I'm a hillbilly. It's education. This presents a particularly tricky challenge for those trying to combat vaccine hesitancy, especially as demand for first doses in the province appears to be waning. Roughly 69% of eligible Albertans have received a first dose so far, with just over 20% being fully vaccinated. However, the province has been pushing for a threshold of 70% with at least one shot in order to move to stage 3 of its 3-stage reopening plan, which would see many of its restrictions lifted. And it was kind of, you know, yesterday was a Monday. It wasn't a holiday or anything, but yesterday was a Monday in Charleston in almost summer. And I saw places that I've known for years. They're closed. They're gone. They couldn't make it. On the other hand, the Adelphia Sports Bar and Grill had people in this on the sidewalks, in the sidewalk cafe, and eating outside and loving life. But there's still way too many. And look, as David in South Carolina Stan pointed out, and this is, you know, Titanic intellect, Moran, all rolled together. A guy in the Atlanta area murdered a cashier at a Big Bear grocery store. Over the store's mask policy. He just pulled out a gun and killed the cashier. DeKalb County Sheriff Melody Maddox said the subject pulled out a weapon and shot a cashier at the location. The individual is deceased. The spokesperson for the sheriff's office continued and said, although details are not complete, authorities say that the male suspect, of course, was involved in a dispute with a young woman before he began firing at her inside the store. There was apparently an altercation over the mask policy clearly posted on the store's door. A witness identified as Alan Williams said a man walked into the store, struck the woman with a gun, and then shot her, and that's when the deputy and suspect exchanged gunfire. Over a mask. Bet I know how he votes. No, I should, though, Billable. That cowbell is for Joey, telling off Jim Crow Mansion staffers who wouldn't allow the good people to present their petition in redress of their grievances. Indeed. And Joey was being careful, by the way, in that blazing West Virginia sun. He was slathering on the sunscreen. And somehow we got separated. And once the march started, I didn't see him again. Glad to know he made it back home, he and Giraffe. Oh, back to obsessed. Obsessed with dragging Joe Manchin to the left. Jack in Shreveport says, it's one of those words like hysterical when they target women. It makes the target sound crazy, and by association, the legislation or whatever, it's no doubt focus grouped. Oh, I've got years and years and years of listening to Hoppy trying to, well, he must feel like he's just in wingnut heaven, because this state has finally abandoned its progressive history and its progressive roots, and we are... And you know, There's a Republican supermajority. Oh, and a Republican member of the West Virginia House of Delegates. I can't remember his name off the top of my head. But over the weekend, he came out as gay. This should be interesting. Wonder how he voted, and I've got to look it up. Wonder how he voted when it came time to screw over the trans kids. 'Tis a puzzlement. Oh, as to the Porsche, Jeremy in Vermont says, oh, come on now. We all know about the Maybach, the Gulfstream, the hangar you use to fly away from the poor and homeless, the hot tub and the pool boy. We're not worried about a Porsche. Oh, yeah, my great big invisible Gulfstream 5 and you know, Wonder Woman, and my great big invisible airplane hangar where I can hide from having to see. Yes. Damn it, Jeremy, you weren't supposed to tell that. Jeremy adds, my DNA has been here in the Northeast since 1720. It came from the West before that. From the West? Awesome. Buying a senator in the other political party demoralizes us, says Irwin in Montana. I think that buying of Democratic senators ends up being effective in that it is demoralizing to us all. They, the oligarchs, are getting their money's worth with corruption of Manchin. That lets Republicans off the hook as well. Yeah, the Republicans are laughing up their sleeves. I don't know if he knows they're laughing at them, but they are. Or they're laughing at him, but they are. We'd be getting all the shit if it was us doing it, but instead that damn Joe's doing it for us and we ain't catching nothing. We'll have this Senate back in Republican control in no time flat. At least image-wise, they're off the hook, says Irwin, and it's a very good cynical political strategy. There's nothing someone who says they're independent now, two Facebook friends who are still Republicans, I think, than that both sides are the same. Both sides are corrupt, after all. Yeah, what did George Wallace say? There's not a dime's worth of difference? And then Ralph Nader adopted George Wallace's own talking points. And I think George Wallace had said that, having cabbaged that off of who? Oh, yeah, the rapist Strom Thurmond. I'm very pessimistic, Irwin says, about the country now. We've been lucky with the right people at the right time in the past in this country. I think that that's ended. I don't think we have enough character in people now. Not enough of them to stop our slide into what will be authoritarian government, and relatively soon. I'm a pessimist about the future. I think we'll have to go through dictatorship here to wise up. Talk me off the edge, Robin. No, Irwin, I'm going to come out there with you. I just won't smoke a cigarette and flick it at the maggots 20 stories below. And the problem with being a nuclear superpower that decides to descend into authoritarian fascism. And, you know, that's who the Republicans are. Well, it's going to be awfully hard to wrest power away from them if they finally consolidate it. And so that is, that's the struggle, Irwin. Keeping it from happening. And that's what made what Reverend Barber did so very, very important and made me glad I was there, even if there was a little bit of disappointment. Look, there's always going to be sour with the sweet, and there's always going to be sadness and joy. We live in a true duality, and I often reject binaries, but it seems like that one is almost unavoidable. And as Jeremy points out, we have passed 600,000 dead in the United States from COVID, plus 124 today. United States, 33.4 million cases. Is that world? No, that's the United States. and 600,000 deaths. And that's probably a low ball because we still don't know about all of the deaths. Yes, she is, Silent R, Lamar the Magnificent, but I don't want to be. Reading ain't worth the grief I'd get, so, yes. Darlene says, what do you think of Jon Stewart on Stephen Colbert's return to Live Late Night? Everyone was vaccinated, saying that COVID-19 was developed in the Wuhan lab. He said it is science. I saw that, Darlene, and it grieves me. I understand what Steve was getting at every time I would mention this Wuhan non-troversy. Steve always responded, what does it matter? It's here. We have to deal with it. All true. But I find the fact that this is getting traction, even with someone as, well, I interpreted as intelligent as Jon Stewart. Well, I find it disturbing and disheartening because we are feeding we're feeding the narrative of the maggots. And it is a dangerous, damned game to play. Let's check in on the audio from that. Trying to see where it comes in. There's Jon Stewart coming out. Let's do some talking or something.
I guess this is it.
This is a delight to have you here, my friend.
Oh, my God. There's nothing I wanted to do more than breathe everyone's air.
Well, here's the thing. This is what I know about you. We are truly dear friends, and yet this is the first time I've seen you in the flesh in 15 months.
That is correct.
Right.
And I am so really happy. And I know we're all vaccinated, and I'm not going to get COVID, but I'm going to get something. I'm honestly, these people did not take good care of themselves during the pandemic.
The first time we talked during... Yeah. COVID. I was still in South Carolina, and
you were locked down.
I was locked down there, and the family, Evie and the kids, were the actual crew.
Right.
That's how we were doing it. We're doing it in a little unused little bedroom with cables through the window and a satellite truck on our lawn. And I mean, like the room was twice the size of this desk. I think I'm not joking. Chris could tell you it's really really tiny. But the point was like just get it done, to get something out there. We really wanted to do the show. And when I interviewed you for it, you were talking about how little progress we've made in science in combating pandemics. Because in 1918, mm-hmm. the advice was wear a mask, wash your hands.
That's right.
And 103 years later, wear a mask, wash your hands.
It was soul crushing to find that. I was really hoping that, like, in 1918, they'd be like, drink a tincture of mercury and butterfly juice. Like, I was hoping it'd be like some bizarre thing, and I'm like, we've come a long way, baby. It's the exact same.
How do you feel about the science now,
though? Well, so I will say this. I honestly mean this. I think we owe a great debt of gratitude to science. Science has, in many ways, helped ease the suffering of this pandemic, which was more than likely caused by science. So, and that's kind of,
Hold on one second.
No. Listen.
It's coffee. I wouldn't do that to you.
I'm all for spit takes.
But what do you mean by that? Do you mean like perhaps there's a chance that this was created in a lab, there's an investigation?
A chance?
Well, if there's evidence, I'd love to hear it.
There's a novel respiratory coronavirus overtaking Wuhan, China. What do we do? Oh, you know who we could ask? The Wuhan novel respiratory coronavirus lab. The disease is the same name as the lab. That's just a little too weird, don't you think? And then they ask those scientists, they're like, how did this... So wait a minute, you work at the Wuhan respiratory coronavirus lab. How did this happen? And they're like, a pangolin kissed a turtle. And you're like, no, if you look at the name, let me see your business card. Show me your business card. Oh, I work at the coronavirus lab in Wuhan. Oh, because there's a coronavirus loose in Wuhan. How did that happen? Maybe a bat flew into the cloaca of a turkey and then it sneezed into my chili and now we all have coronavirus. Like, come on.
Wait a second.
All right.
John.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. There's been an outbreak of chocolatey goodness near Hershey, Pennsylvania. What do you think happened? Like, oh, I don't know. Maybe a steam shovel mated with a cocoa bean. Or it's the chocolate factory. Maybe that's it.
That could be.
Can't get on board with that. I mean, people are cheering and hooting and laughing some. But it does not appear that he's not parodying the maggots. He's just talking just like them. You know, right as the program was beginning, I got my evening's airing of grievances from Nitwit Nero.
I have accepted the invitation of Texas Governor Greg Abbott to join him on an official visit to our nation's decimated southern border on Wednesday, June 30th, 2021.
Nah, go on Thursday, June 31st, you fuckwit.
We went from detain and remove to catch and release. We went from having border security that was the envy of the world to lawless border that is now pitied around the world. We went from kidnapping children and ripping them from their mother's arms to not losing babies.
But that string of, you know, snarky allegations from Jon Stewart, I guess it's, you know, he's a comedian. Anything for a giggle, right? But I'm still not buying. It does not, no, he makes the idea of species-to-species transmission sound like it's something wacky and crazy, when in fact that is the entire history of disease development. Oof. Hey, what do you think, Darlene? Because I don't know. It doesn't make my spidey sense tingle. It makes my spidey sense feel like poison ivy. Yeah, and as Randy and PA points out, never mind that China was vastly harmed by the virus. But you know what else doesn't help? The allegation, and I saw it over the weekend, and it's not so much an allegation, it's just that, you know, in closed information tamped down societies, good quality information is often hard to find. That's part of the reason so many people, I suppose, are suspicious of how the coronavirus evolved, mutated, transmitted zoonotically. but apparently there's some sort of radiation leak at a Chinese nuclear power plant. And remember how it started, remember how the information on Chernobyl started, and then all of a sudden there was no denying it because the radiation was getting all over Europe? Oh no, our little radiation leaks, no big deal, nothing to worry about, nothing to see here, move along. Yeah. But that will be used to bolster the, well, you know, they can't run a nuclear reactor, they can't run a lab, I mean, you know, all they can do is run slave labor shops to make our computer components. No. Spidey sense still having a problem. And meanwhile, speaking of Greg Abbott, David in South Carolina, Stan, sent this along. I just signed a resolution asserting Texas sovereignty under the 10th Amendment over all powers not granted to the federal government by the U.S. Constitution. The resolution officially notifies the President and Congress to cease acts of encroaching upon the powers of states. Well, I'm sure Joe Biden's going to just... hell, Joe. Reanimate the corpse of William Tecumseh Sherman. Create zombie General Sherman and send him and a few zombie Union brigades down to Texas and send him with a book of matches. These fucking people can't learn. Of course, it's not just Texas. It's Missouri, too. Oh, fuck yes, it's Missouri. You might recall that there was, and we've talked about this before, there was a concept once upon a time in American history, and it had a name, and there were some Lulus, mainly in the South, who said that individual state legislatures were such petty little dictatorships that they felt like individual states had the right to tell the federal government which federal laws they wanted to follow and which ones they didn't. And the name of that principle, if we can laughingly call it that, was nullification. Nullification. And, yeah, South Carolina got reduced to ash as a result of it in that little dust-up from 1861 to 1865. And you'd think that people would have learned, but no, welcome to Missouri. Governor Mike Parson of Missouri, a bona fide idiot, has signed legislation this past Saturday that invalidates or claims to invalidate every single federal gun law in the state of Missouri. The KCUR report says Missouri law enforcement officials no longer have to execute federal gun laws. The bill Governor Parson signed says that all federal gun laws, past, present, and future, must be invalid in the state of Missouri. This includes taxing, tracking, and registration of weapons. It's the Second Amendment Preservation Act. And he went to and what an odd thing. One of my very favorite guitar players, the jazz genius Pat Metheny, was born and raised in Lee's Summit, Missouri. I've been to Lee's Summit, Missouri. But Governor Parson went to a gun store in Lee's Summit, Missouri. And danged if it, and there was a big crowd around him when he sat in the gun store and said, all federal laws is now illegal in the state of Missouri. Once upon a time, we had a principle called federalism. And we have a constitutional principle called preemption.
in which the federal government can declare that the federal government is going to take over, or it's not even that. The federal government has the rights to make laws about firearms. I mean, the Second Amendment's in the federal constitution, for fuck's sake. The purpose of the legislation is to stand up to the federal government. We're going to do things to make sure you don't overreach your authority from the federal government. So police can't assist federal agents in enforcing federal gun laws. Or federal laws, period. There's a $50,000 lawsuit against anyone who knowingly acts under any federal or state law to deprive a Missouri citizen of their Second Amendment rights. Jesus Christ. Missouri's chapters of Moms Demand Action and Students Demand Action said, "We are frustrated and disappointed that Governor Parson signed a dangerous bill into law today that ties the hands of law enforcement officers while Missouri is facing one of the worst gun violence epidemics in the country." The Democratic House Minority Leader, Crystal Quaid, said, "It's a radical, dangerous, and obviously unconstitutional attempt to declare that Missouri will refuse to follow federal gun laws." And here's the problem, and it's the same problem that pops up every time one of these antebellum ridiculous acts of idiocy and petulance arises, and it almost always goes back to nullification. Once upon a time, we had a judiciary that we could count on would ultimately say, "Fuck off, no." Those days are over. Much to our chagrin. And the right wing knows that they're over. And that's why they're doing these things, because they want the lawsuits. I'm sure Governor Parson, a former right wing sheriff, probably one of those constitutional sheriff assholes, I'm sure he can't wait for it to get to the Supreme Court so that gang of, and, you know, maybe dead-eyed Balls and Strikes John Roberts would go along with the three lonely so-called liberal justices. But that's still a 5-4 decision. And we may see, in the next couple of years, a Supreme Court willing to invalidate any government, any federal effort to regulate firearms. And they're so insulated from the rest of the real world that they won't care, and they won't see the blood dripping like that scene from Carrie. It'll be there every morning, every night, rising and going to sleep. Amy COVID Barrett, who sat on the board of an educational institution that blinked at rape. You think a little matter of some mommy not getting to come home from her cashier job in Georgia is going to bother Brett Kavanaugh when he's living in a house that was paid for by somebody else and just given to him? You think his white privilege is gonna be in the least even annoyed by that? Fuck no. The average gun death rate in the United States is 12 per 100,000. Missouri is among the worst 10 states for gun deaths. The sponsor of the bill in the Missouri legislature is a creep by the name of Jared Taylor from Christian County, Missouri. Oh, dear. "It's the strongest Second Amendment bill in the country." The feds use us. They rely on us to enforce their laws. Look at medical marijuana in the state of Missouri. This is exactly what we do with that. It's exactly what sanctuary cities use. No, it isn't. And so, you know, the Jared Taylor of Christian County, Missouri, he's not going to lose any sleep either. Because it's not going to touch him. He doesn't think. Pretty sure. Because he's a Christian from Christian County. Nullification in Missouri. Steve in New York says, so no federal laws affecting guns are now enforceable, so the federal laws don't apply to them in Missouri. Does the federal Constitution's Second Amendment apply? Might as well not, but here's the funny thing. What about other federal laws, like the federal law that sends more money to Missouri than Missouri pays in? Maybe that doesn't apply either. But this helps explain people like Josh Hawley. Again, the principle that we've enunciated on a number of occasions. You don't get Josh Hawley. You don't get Marsha Gedneth Blackburn. Idiot. You don't get Louis Asparagus Gohmert or Mo Brooks Les Brames without a whole lot of people who are just like them back home. So there are fools in Missouri who somehow think they're more free now than they were before. But wait, are there any national forests or national parks or national wild scenic rivers or national parks of any sort? Are there any of those in Missouri? Because I guess that means that Barack Obama's affirmative act, the only thing he did about guns for the most part, I guess his decision that it would be okay to tote your freedom protectors in national parks and national forests and whatnot, I guess that's by the boards too. So does that mean you can't do that now in the Mark Twain National Forest? Don't know. That's curious. Probably need to sort that out. Funny, Randy in PA says, how federalism doesn't seem to apply to the marijuana laws passed by the states. Yeah. And it is expressed as a function of states' rights. I don't know. I don't know. Let's see, a couple of notes, and then I'm going to the phones, because I've filibobstered for almost two continuous hours. Going back to John Stewart, Cynthia in the Bay Area says, I was disturbed by John Stewart, too. It felt like he joined QAnon or something. Even the look in his eyes didn't look right to me, and Colbert seemed like he was taken aback as well. Colbert's comment that you may be right is not the same as being right, and pushing something like this without proof is really dangerous. I expected far better from John Stewart. Me, too. And I don't think I don't think he did anybody a favor, but I also don't think he was just going for a cheap laugh either. Unless something comes out and he says, you know, listen, y'all, I was kidding. I mean, it was my first time. I hadn't seen my buddy for a year and a half. I mean, I'd probably feel better if he did, but, well, that horse is out of the barn. The barn's on fire.
Glenn in San Diego says, I urge anyone who doesn't appreciate the importance of needing to understand how and where the COVID-19 virus originated to watch the interview with Jamie Metzl on Amanpour and Company from a few days ago. It's easily accessed on YouTube and is well worth your time. Knowing the source and conditions under which it was allowed to spread is vital to understanding how to deal with outbreaks in the future and whether we need better regulation and security measures for both wet markets and research labs. Yeah, and I mean, it appears that the wet markets are still a likely culprit. And I don't know, and the Wuhan lab is a level 4, as Paul from Parts Unknown explained to us. It's a level 4 lab. But apparently, it just feels like there's a great desire to say this came from a lab. Maybe for the same reason that Mary Shelley's Frankenstein was so popular with its audience when it first came out, and the book remains popular, and the films are popular. The monster. Of course, by the time you get done reading the book, you're really not sure who the monster was. The thing that Frankenstein created, or Frankenstein himself. The new Prometheus. And remember, Marjorie Trader Gangrene Q-Ball, I don't believe in science, I believe in God. That way lies madness. And there's way too much potential for backlash coming out of this that we will rue for a long time. Dave in South Carolina stand pointing out, the U.S. can't even defend its own capital. How are we going to defeat China? We're not. We couldn't know. I mean, we can't. 330 million people can't defeat 2 billion. But, you know, that doesn't bother the maggots.
Yeah, we can beat them Chinese, because Jesus ain't got Jesus.
Fort Lost in the Woods, Missouri, David says, is in. I guess they can do without those dollars, too. Fort Leonard Wood. Yep. Well, hey, there's Brother Bishop Steve from Georgistan. Hey, Steve.
Blobbin, what's going on, man?
Steve!
Oh, man, I'm just being worked like a yard dog. I ain't got time to breathe, man. And plus, you got everyday life. You know, it still piles on, you know. So it's just been crazy.
Oh,
crazy.
And I've been busier in the last 9 months than I have been probably ever.
And you know the industry I'm in. People, since, you know, we're back to semi-normalcy, they're not cooped up anymore.
They're stupid.
Oh, my God. Robin, they're losing their minds.
I can't imagine what your paperwork looks like these days.
I'll call you off air, because I really don't want to discuss it on air, and you would just be shocked some of the things that I'm processing here lately. It's just unbelievable.
Well, I mean, you don't have to give away any names, but if there's some real Lulus out there, we don't have to go into great detail, but, you know. You can share. I mean,
well, maybe on the porch or something. One of the main reasons I called is, of course, I missed the front end of the show, and I could always hit the podcast, but Reader's Digest version. I wanted to find out how you made out yesterday, and if you don't want to get into that,
it's fine. I mean, yeah, that was the first hour of the program.
Yeah.
But the bottom line is, Reverend Barber is extremely powerful and extremely passionate, and inspiring in ways I can scarcely describe. The downside was the lack of inclusion and organization.
What I found disappointing, Robin, is it didn't get the media coverage that I was hoping for wall-to-wall media coverage. to kind of put old Joe on the hot seat, and I didn't see it for where I'm sitting.
Well, I mean, there were some write-ups here and there.
Did you catch any media coverage?
I mean, they talked about it on MSNBC last night at some length. But I don't know if that's even possible. It's just everything is so fragmented now, Steve.
I understand. And morning, even your dirty morning habit, they mentioned it, but I was hoping to see some footage of a lot of pissed off West Virginians, and I didn't see.
Well, they weren't, Steve, they weren't there.
Really?
I mean, the crowd was no bigger than 200 people, maybe three tops.
Damn. I was hoping, I guess being the eternal optimist, I was hoping for thousands.
You and me and yeah, but toward the end of the rally part of it, Reverend Barber kind of addressed it, and he said, "Listen, there weren't that many people at the first Selma march. It was about like this," he said.
So I.
But he said, "But he said we are not done. This is the beginning, not the end." And so I guess they have further plans to march on him in Washington, and that will probably bring a whole lot more people.
And a whole lot more coverage. You're putting it right in their backyard. So there's that.
Yeah, one hopes. And if I can be there, I'll by God be there.
Yeah, he's a problem, Robin. He's a problem, and I've been racking my brain trying to figure out how we're going to deal with this guy. I came up with an idea, and I even ran it kind of past the back porch, and I'd like to run it by you if you wouldn't
mind. Go
ahead,
yeah.
And just hear me out first. We need to offer this guy an ultimatum. We need to go for the long game the way I am thinking, knowing that we're going to throw ourselves in the minority. Say, look, Joe, you either get on board or you get the F out. We're done with you. We don't want you in this party anymore. Knowing that we're going to lose the majority. Let's pin him. Let's make him Mitch's contrarian. Let Mitch deal with this son of a
bitch,
man.
Won't be. He won't be. And I'm sorry. You told me hear me out. So, no, let me continue to hear you out. I apologize.
No, that's okay. I mean, and I even had some people that I didn't think would agree with me say that doesn't really sound like too bad of an idea. Because if we can show the masses, hey, we're not going to let this guy push us around, and we're even willing to take, because if he doesn't get on board, we're not going to be able to do anything anyhow.
Well, remember, Steve, you're talking to somebody who wrote an editorial in the Charleston Gazette 4 years ago that called on him to do exactly that. Get out. Go.
Just go. We are done with you. I mean, Chuck Schumer needs to grow a set. Chuck, Joe, the president, and Joe from West Virginia need to
But Steve, you can't be drummed out of the party.
You can't fire somebody from. See, I don't really know the logistics.
No, you can't. And see, the state of the West Virginia Democratic Party is a Democratic Party that has been transformed into a cult of personality for Joe Manchin, and he ain't going to let go of it. The Democratic Party in West Virginia is Joe Manchin, and Joe Manchin is the Democratic Party in West Virginia. That is why West Virginia has lost all, West Virginia Democrats have lost all of their clout. Before Joe Manchin, you know, I don't know what other states call it, but in West Virginia, the statewide elective offices are called the Board of Public Works. And that is the governor, the treasurer, the secretary of state, the secretary of agriculture, and the auditor. They are the Board of Public Works. Before Joe Manchin's ascension to the top of West Virginia politics, we had all five.
Mm-hmm.
We now have zero. And that's what happens when parties are turned into cults of personality.
Well, give me a civics lesson here, Robin. You mean to tell me if all the Democratic senators had a vote, even an above board vote, and said, we want him gone. We're tired of his contrarian ass. We're tired of him gumming up the works. He's either got to get on board or get the F out.
He's going to say fuck off.
There's no mechanism to kick him out.
No.
You're telling me that.
No.
There should be.
I mean, I guess in theory. I mean, okay. I mean, you got me brainstorming here, Steve.
And I understand I'm playing for the long game because I know we're going to lose the majority, but we're not going to – it doesn't matter because we're not going to be able to get shit passed anyhow, and the House will still have subpoena power.
Well, I mean
– and I'm afraid he's going to – see, he right now, Robin, he is a blight on democracy, and he is an albatross for the Democratic Party's neck, hanging around our neck, and I say let's cut this albatross loose. If he's not going to get on board, I'm afraid he's going to hurt us more than he's going to help us.
I think you're absolutely right. I will add only that he has voted the right way on a number of bills.
He has.
We have the current COVID relief because he got behind it.
He did.
And, you know, his voting record's around, like, 80%-ish. But he has been paid to stop the any so-called leftward shift, which is actually a shift toward the center. But there's one way. I mean, if this is simply an academic exercise in theory, off the top of my head, Steve, I can come up with one answer. Everybody could vote to do to him what the House did to Marjorie Traitor Gangrene Cueball.
And just strip him of all committees.
Strip him of his committees.
Yeah, and then he'll pout up and leave.
Then he might, yeah. Because then there would be some value to going to the Republicans insofar as he would give the Republicans the majority, and he would then get his, there would be negotiations, and he would get his chairmanship back at Natural Resources. But the Republican Party in West Virginia wouldn't piss on him to put out a fire, even if he came over to them.
Maybe that's a good thing. But here's the cold, hard fact. If we don't get SB1 passed, we're in trouble. HR1, SB1, and the John Lewis one, that's good. I mean, it's good, but it's not enough.
Well, see, he's just getting away with too much. Nobody will pin him and just really bear down and make him explain himself. Or challenge him enough to get him to, because I want to know.
Well, you know, I mean, the For the People Act, it divides our country and it'll be bad for.
No more platitudes, Joe. No more bullshit weasel words. Tell us what in the For the People Act you find so odious and unbearable. What is it?
Right.
Specifics. We need specifics, Joe.
And you could tailor the filibuster to just deal with civil rights legislation. Say, we're not doing a filibuster for this. This is too damn important. This is a majority vote. Get on board.
But Steve, that's already happening.
But if he doesn't get on board, I mean, and then you got Sinema too. I mean, she's nearly almost as bad. She's just
yeah, but she's a co she's a co-sponsor of the For the People Act, for God's sakes.
Yeah, there's that. And if this plays out and we do nothing, you know, Mitch, I can hear him now. Well, they had all three chambers, the House, the Senate, and the American people. You know, he's going to run with that shit. They had their chance. They had all three chambers, and they couldn't get anything done. Let's not be listening to the American people. You know how he is. And Mitch has already came right out and said that if something happens between 2022, 2024, and the Senate, the Republicans are in the majority, they're going to do the same thing that they've been doing as far as Supreme Court justice.
Right, and that's why people are beginning to put pressure on Breyer to retire.
And he needs to retire.
It's a lifetime appointment, and I tend to think that, you know, it's up to him, but I think given the current situation, he damned well better. But then we're back in the same damn place, Steve.
Right.
Joe Biden has to go to Joe Manchin and say, who would you be okay with for Supreme Court justice? And Joe says, let me look at my Federalist Society list. It makes me bananas.
Oh, it's infuriating. That's why I think it would be liberating to just cut him loose, cut our losses, and play for the long game. And that's why I wanted to kick, you know, this idea I've had rolling around in my head, and I've been kicking it around in chat for a couple of weeks now, and I wanted to get your take on it. And from what I'm hearing, it's just not, civically, it's not doable.
Well, there's that, and there's the fact that no one voluntarily relinquishes power. Chuck Schumer would like to exercise more power, but he at least has some power.
Fuck power. Democracy is at stake.
That's great. I agree with you, but that is not how power works in Washington. They're going to continue to kiss Joe Manchin's ass and try to get from him what they can get. I mean, it's going all the way back to Neera Tanden, who was certainly not a great person, and I wish Joe Biden had never nominated her. But I sat here, you remember, and I said, this is a horrible precedent because this establishes the fact that Joe Manchin has veto power over the entire Biden agenda. And then I listened to that prattling ignoramus on West Virginia Talk Line today, and he says, well, you know, Joe Manchin doesn't like all this Green New Deal stuff in the infrastructure package. What Green New Deal stuff? Oh, for fuck's sake, please!
Oh, God damn, it makes your head explode.
Green Jesus. New Deal stuff.
Green New... Jesus Christ. We need to put our heads together, the Democratic Party, and figure out a way to deal with this. And I don't know if just – and see, the Republicans, they're experts at running out the clock, and they're doing it right in front of our very eyes. We've seen them do it before, and it's like we're watching the movie play over again. We need to get out in front of this somehow, some way. And that was just an idea that I had, and thank you for letting me run that by.
Well, no, I mean it feels what you're talking about, Steve, feels cleansing. It feels, and I don't mean this in a negative way. It feels kind of pure. But the other side of that is, as good as it might feel, you know, I don't know what would be a good analogy. that 3 foot long rail of coke really makes you feel like a new man, and then it wears off, and it feels like shit, and it feels like shit, and you feel like shit. That's probably what this would be like. I mean. God, we're free of Joe Manchin, and you wake up the next morning and go, oh, wait, I'm going to spend the rest of my time in the Senate getting fucked by Mitch McConnell even worse. And you know, you don't wish for things like this, and so you even mention it at the risk of whispering it into the ears of the goddess of irony. But Joe Manchin's going to get a chance
to feel like a real fuck up.
You know, I'm protecting the filibuster because I want to protect the traditions of the Senate. You know, the Senate won't function without the filibuster. It's what makes us so special. And I just want to protect the legacy and the history and the of the Senate.
And if the Republicans get power and there's something they want, you know, because the day will probably come when they will have both houses and the presidency again. And if Joe Manchin has preserved the filibuster, I don't want that day to come. But by the same token, Steve, if it comes, I want it to be when Joe Manchin is still in the Senate of the United States, so that when they find something they, by God, want, they'll pass it. They will get rid, you know, and Joe will be standing there saying, but bipartisanship, but, and Mitch McConnell will say, hey, you patsy little fuck, sit down and shut the fuck up.
You had your chance. You had all three chambers. You couldn't get any.
Oh, you do that way too well. And then the Republicans will ditch the filibuster, drop it like a hot rock.
As soon as it comes to serve them, they will.
And then it'll be done, and America will be fucked, and we can all point at Joe Manchin and ha, 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 you know, and crank up Kenneth Copeland.
I understand that.
But you simpleton. You fool!
Isn't that kind of like Barney Fife locking himself in jail and saying, look who looks foolish now, Sheriff?
There we go. Exactly. And I'm tired of all the blue smoke and mirrors talking about what a hard-working Senator Joe is and how he listens to the people of West Virginia. Horse shit, he listens to the people of West Virginia. That same neo maxi Zoom dweeby who used to be his comms guy in his Senate office, and is now, I guess, he's gone out in the private sector or whatever. They had him on Lawrence last night. Sparky sent me the link to the video, and I just sat there. You silly God, because I've never seen anybody stay more in contact with their constituency than Joe. I've never seen more 304 area code numbers land on one person's phone. I mean, people are calling him day and night. You know, a couple of days ago, I saw where a woman had her a picture taken with Joe, and she said, I have faith, do you? And my response to it was to put up a post with a verse from Psalms, you know, put not thy faith in princes or senators.
Ooh, that's good. That's good, Robin.
And explained myself and why I was going to go to the rally. And
going to that. Not to sound patronizing, but it's heartbreaking that, you know, there's only 300 or 400 people. I thought there'd be thousands. Because you had 80% that want this thing passed. They want minimum wage. You know, and Joe is standing in the way.
But this movement has some learning to do. You know, as I walked past,
eats legs, man.
As I walked, like I said, as I walked past Reverend Barber, on the march route, I said, "We really need the Equality Act too." And Joe Manchin stopping that, and he said, "Yes, we do. Yes, we do, sister."
I said, "We
need a mention. We needed a mention today."
Unless it's worth repeating it, but I appreciate you bringing me up to speed. I just hadn't had a chance to even listen to the show. Things have been so nuts. And Robin, let me get out of here. I got to let Cletus out, and I want to hear if there's any other opinions.
If anybody wants to jump in on this, you're mighty welcome to, because I think it'd be a beneficial conversation to have in there. Darlene says, don't forget, Steve, Biden gave Manchin's wife a plum position on the Appalachian Regional Commission, didn't he? Yes. And what did he get in return? Not bupkis. Why did he do that without extracting something from Joe Manchin? Because after 4 years of quid pro quos, he ain't going to be accused. He's not going to allow himself to be accused of the same thing. So, Steve, you have yourself a good evening, and say hi to little Cletus for me.
All right, Robin. Hey, I love you, ma'am. M-A-M.
I love you too, and it's I love hearing from you because you always bring something thought provoking to the conversation.
Well, thank you, sir. Ma'am, thank you. I'll catch you later, Robin.
All right, see you, Steve. Give our best to Miss Karen.
Take care.
Bye now.
I'll do it, man. Bye now.
Brother Bishop Steve from Georgistan, all around great guy, and I sure do understand what he's talking about. Note coming from Angelo in the People's Republic of the Bronx. The Democrats will have no choice but to primary Manchin. This, in conjunction with replacing a no longer effective Dianne Feinstein, although there is a risk of getting a Republican from West Virginia, it's not a risk, it's a certainty. If you successfully primary Joe Manchin, you're going to get somebody that makes Genghis Khan look like Demosthenes. I would rather take that risk than to give Manchin any more free rein than what he has now. The time has come for the Democrats to directly confront the Republicans, even on their home turf. The left has to come to the realization that liberals aren't their enemy. The growing fascist right is. Amen, Angelo. Amen. But again, the calendar is part of this, too. Joe Manchin is there until January 1 of 2025. Okay, he's not up in 22. So there's not a damn thing to be done between now and then. That's first. And I come back to what I have said is the remedy all along. I had said in regard to the march and the rally that, you know, 6 months after Georgia saved the nation, miraculously and surprisingly even, it was going to be West Virginia's turn, and I hoped we were equal to the task. Well, so far, we're not. I'm not giving up. Nobody else that was there yesterday is giving up. But there just weren't enough of us there yesterday. This needs a repeat and a reboot, and there needs to be, by God, 10 times as many people. And that's going to involve organizing. And I bring up again what I learned long years ago. There's a big difference between organizing and mobilizing. Organizing is what you do for the long term. You build coalitions, you build your membership, you get people involved. Mobilizing is what you do when the wolf is at your door, when the threat is immediate and real. And I've been part of organizations that have tried to do both for nearly 20 years. We've had some success and a lot of failures. I'm just being honest. But we don't give up. At the end of every program, I thank the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch. And they graciously invited me into their ranks 17 years ago. 18 years ago. And I joined that struggle. And I have never given up. But I have seen that movement grow and then contract. And this is a wildly different state than it was even in 2003. And like I said, I don't know if it's like this all over the country. I suspect that when Reverend Barber does something in, say, North Carolina, it's an entirely different experience. The clergy from the African American church, several members were there yesterday. It was a really nice mixture of, as Reverend Barber put it, holler and hood. And that was inspiring to see. But we have to coalition build, and frankly, everybody around the country can help. they had an organizer from Move On there who said that there are some 10,000 Move On members in West Virginia. Well, they need to show up, and I hope that they will continue to organize them for another round. We had to rally where we had to rally, down at Magic Island Park, and then march to the building that Manchin's Charleston headquarters are in, because that building sits next to Women's and Children's Hospital. And so you can't be having, I got the sense that that Reverend Barber felt like that was deliberate, because that means nobody can gather there and chant and scream and have speakers and stuff like that. Makes it more convenient for Joe. Because God knows there's plenty of office space all over the city, but he's there in the lottery headquarters, which is away from everything else. But to get back to what I was saying about doing something about Joe Manchin, I spend more time thinking about this than I should. But the answer to Joe Manchin, well, it's like what Judy Bond said as she lay dying. My mentor. She was living proof that dynamite comes in small packages. She was so special. And she was killed by the same poisons that kill people all over southern West Virginia in the sacrifice zone. But as she was dying, she said, "Fight harder. Fight harder." It's not "don't quit fighting," it's "fight harder." And so 2022 will see the Republican Party face as many it'll have to defend as many seats as it did in the last cycle, if not more. And they're mostly in difficult states, but nobody said this was going to be easy. If you want to end the tyrannical reign of Joe Manchin, then give us more Democratic senators. The current dynamic is what has given him the power. And God, he loves the spotlight. Don't kid yourself, he loves it. And he loves being Queen of the May. And he loves having everybody wanting to, well, everybody hanging on his every word. Take that away from him. And the way you take that away from him is to take Marco Rubio's Senate seat away from him in Florida. And you keep Reverend Warnock, you give him a full 6 years in Georgia. And you give a full 6 years to Senator Kelly in Arizona. Go after Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, for all you're worth. Find someone in Alabama who will be a forceful, powerful, moral force of a figure to run for the Democratic nomination for the seat being vacated by Richard Shelby, who entered the Senate as a Democrat and then turned out to be a traitor and a turncoat. I mean, let me just look here. Senate elections 2022. We've looked at this map before. Come on. Republicans have to defend seats in Utah, Idaho, Alaska, North and South Dakota, Iowa, Wisconsin. Jesus Christ, please tell me there's someone in Wisconsin who can beat that mental midget Ron Johnson. So, Ron Johnson, vulnerable. Marco Rubio, vulnerable. They have to defend a seat in Talibandiana, in Louisiana, in Arkansas, Oklahoma, Kansas. The fighting chance in Kansas. So let's see, just one, two. Ohio, for God's sakes. There's an open seat in Ohio. There is an open seat in Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania's Lieutenant Governor, John Fetterman, is running for that. And God, I hope he gets it. That's a campaign worth getting behind. Richard Burr is calling it quits in North Carolina. There's hope there. So one, two, let's say Ohio. I mean, let's just at least think about it. One, two, three. You know, because they've got an incumbent Democratic senator in Sherrod Brown, who the still dead Rush Limbaugh once assumed from his first name was a black man and pronounced him as Sherrod Brown. Sherrod Brown. About as close as you can get to an actual progressive in the Senate. You know, who's got a D behind his name. I'm not counting Bernie, because Bernie's got an I. But that's three seats. Marco Rubio in Florida is four. Vacant seats in Missouri and Alabama, 5-6. We defend our seats and take those six from them, Joe Manchin is no longer relevant. He can grunt and bark and hoot and piss and moan and complain about bipartisanship till hell won't hold him. And as long as you've got good candidates, and isn't Val Demings running in Florida? I could get behind her in a hurry. If you've got a Val Demings in Florida and a Fetterman in Pennsylvania, and say a Tim Ryan in Ohio, you got those four. Joe Manchin can pound sand. And that then gives us the last 2 years of the first term of Biden's administration to get shit done. Could it happen? It could happen. Hell, we thought there was no way in heaven or hell that Georgia would ever hand over two Senate seats to the Democrats. It happened. It can be done. You've just got to have relentless campaigning, awesome messaging, and hope to God that these lying, cheating, no good, thieving Republican states can't steal the elections. And now we're back to the For the People Act. Angelo points out that, you know, the Dems will have no choice but to primary Manchin in 2024. And they'll primary him. They'll bring some outside group who don't know grits from gravy, and they'll fundraise on the back of some sacrificial lamb, and they'll send the money out to other campaigns. The sacrificial lamb might get 40% of the primary and will lose. And then Joe Manchin will probably win re-election in 2024 if he chooses to run. So that's where it stands, Angelo. And I'm not taking issue with anything you say. But if you want to take away that free reign of Joe Manchin, Angelo, work with other people and get Ohio, Pennsylvania, Florida, North Carolina, get Democrats in those seats who aren't Joe Manchin mugwumps. I don't think we'd have to worry about Val Demings in Florida being a Joe Manchin mugwump. I don't think John Fetterman's going to be a Joe Manchin mugwump. So there. I mean, that's the only solution I can come up with. And until that time comes, spend from now till then making Joe's life miserable. Make it not fun for him to be in front of the cameras soft-soaping his bullshit. Shorty in L.A., Robin, Steve, it's not about power at all. It's really all about control. Well, I think the one yields the other. Mr. Manchin loves control. You see, people in control soon lose their remote. And when the universe gives that remote control back, it's returned with no batteries. Let's expose his ties to the Koch brothers. Even the dead one. Expose every video of mountains blowing up. Expose through videos that poisoned West Virginia water. Yeah, that water. You know, the flammable water. Yeah, and then the poisoned water with the, I can't even remember the long methyl, whatever. Mick. And by the way, we are about 23 minutes away from the end of the program. We got $65 to go to meet the challenge. The When Manchin Chooses, You Loses challenge that has been anonymously provided. And that would get us down to 2:30, and that means tomorrow won't be quite so horrible. We'd be at 5:30 tomorrow. But $65 is tremendous. God knows if there was some sort of a miracle in the next 24 minutes where we just did the $65 and the rest of the 2:30. Would be inexpressibly wonderful. Can we do it? Please? And by the way, because it is Titanic Tuesday, I have a great Titanic Tuesday story. I read this and it just gave me such a delight. Down in Mobile, Alabama, there is a good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual Christian Republican by the name of Chris Pringle. I mean, that last name's not. Yeah. And he has pre-introduced legislation for the 2022 legislative session, 8 months away, that makes it illegal to teach critical race theory in K-12 or higher education in the state of Alabama. Now, I don't quite know how he's going to make it illegal to teach critical race theory in a private college or university in Alabama. I don't know how he's going to make it legal to teach critical, but that's not the problem. The problem is that a reporter by the name of Kyle Whitmire, a columnist, newspaper columnist. Well, Mr. Whitmire made inquiry of Representing Pringle about just what it is that, you know, well, Representing Pringle, what is critical race theory? And Kyle Whitmire writes, there's been a lot of talk about critical race theory lately, and I felt at a loss. I've heard so many conflicting things about critical race theory, I've gotten more and more confused. Let me help Mr. Whitmire. It's just American history. You know, without the sugar coatings.
So I did, Mr. Whitmire notes, over at AL.com. I did what middle-aged white men are prone to do. I asked another middle-aged white man, but not just any. I called an Alabama lawmaker, State Representative Chris Pringle, R. Mobile, who wants to make it illegal to teach critical race theory in Alabama. And he asked what the bill said, and Pringle said, well, it's pretty simple. All it says is you can't teach critical race theory in K-12 or higher education in the state of Alabama. But that, as Mr. Whitmire noted, is not the question that he asked. What is this critical race theory that people couldn't teach? And so, what's the definition of critical race theory? Well, it basically teaches that certain children are inherently bad people because of the color of their skin, period. Really? I mean, Mr. Whitmire didn't say this, but I will. I'm pretty damn sure that is not critical race theory. That sounded very serious indeed, says Mr. Whitmire, Nazi-like even, so I asked Pringle if there were any critical race theorists he could point to who have been spreading such toxic garbage. I'll have to read a lot more. And tongue planted firmly in cheek, Mr. Whitmire says, I began to get the feeling that Pringle didn't know as much about critical race theory as I had hoped. Were there other examples he could give me where critical race theory was being put into practice? Oh, these people, when they were doing the training programs and the government, if you didn't buy into what they taught you 100%, they sent you away to a re-education camp. Oh, my God. It must have been the Obama FEMA re-education camps. I mean, they sent you to re-education camp. Well, representing Pringle, who are these people? And I guess Mr. Whitmire caught him on the cell phone whilst he was in his pick-em-up truck representing Pringle, because he's a realtor and a home builder and a general contractor, Whitmire reports. And he was looking for the article he'd done read. I want to bet it came from Fox News or, maybe that website that rhymes with light and fart. Thank you, Jeremy. Jeremy just got it down to $60, and Earther just took it down to, oh dear, odd change, $53.50. Thank you, Earther. $53.50 to meet the challenge. Surely to God we can do that in 17 minutes. Jeremy says, is this asshole Chris Kringle's long-lost evil brother, and instead of giving things away, he takes them away? Yeah. And so as he continued to dig in his truck, this titanic intellect of the right, Chris Pringle, said, it doesn't say who it was. It just says a government held these training sessions. The white male executives sent to a three-day re-education camp where they're told that their white male culture wasn't their, he trailed off again. I told him if he'd liked, he could send me a link to the article. I was worried we'd lost our connection, Whitmire writes. But Pringle was still on the line, and after more hemming and hawing, he retreated to a common safe space of politicians who crawled too far out on a limb. He just wanted to start a conversation. I introduced a very brief version of the bill to start the conversation, but it's very difficult in this cancel society to have a frank discussion about racism in this country and this country's history. I mean, history's being rewritten, and I'm not exactly sure of the accuracy of what's there now and what they're trying to change it into.
What, Edith, huh?
It's very difficult in this cancel society to have a frank discussion about racism in this country.
Well, isn't that what critical race theory is trying to do? Have an honest discussion about the role of racism and white supremacy in the history of this nation? Well, I didn't mean like that. Well, I mean, we can't have a frank discussion about how good slavery was and how there's all down there singing in the cotton patch in this cancel society. As Mr. Whitmire points out, this was news to me, as I'd seen lots of lawmakers try to talk about race and history in the Alabama State House, but for whatever reason, they were always the black lawmakers. It was the white lawmakers who usually tried to change the subject. I wanted to ask Pringle about this, but he was suddenly no longer at a loss for words, and I didn't want to interrupt. This is still the greatest country that's ever been in the history of the world. He's listening to the program and stealing my fucking bits. God damn it! Greatest country in the history of the world on earth now today in the universe forever under God. Amen. And the radical left is trying to see this Cal in the end of the word there. That's because it comes from California, you know. Yeah. A bunch of commie pinkos out there that drive Rosicrucian Illuminatis and wine drinking, and marijuana smoking, and probably got lotteries and shit. Ain't got no lottery in Alabama. Radical left trying to destroy that and tear us apart and divide this country based on race and class, which is exactly what they do in communist countries. Whew! That's the straw in the tequila bottles, that's what that is. After bragging to me how he'd BS'd his way through his college political science classes by parroting the liberal bilge his professors wanted to hear, Pringle then said he had to get back to his day job and he had employees waiting on him at a job site, so I let him go. He did text him later, Whitmire did, asking if he could find that link and share it with him, you know, the one about the re-education camps and shit. Sorry, but I can't find it again. Must have deleted the link. Yeah, a Southern politician says something like that, and he's chuckling while he's typing. I just told him I deleted the link. There wasn't no link, you dummy. Liberal! Whitmire says he then reached out to Representative Chris England, the Alabama Democratic Party chair, middle-aged black man. Representative England said he really hadn't been familiar with critical race theory either till his colleagues in the Republican Party started making so much of a fuss about it. And so then Representative England started answering questions. Critical race theory has been around since the 70s, and it's never been taught in K-12. It's post-secondary education theory that is only discussed in master's-level classes. It's all just politicians trying to manipulate people to garner campaign contributions and votes, whipping them up with something that has no basis in merit or fact. And then, sounding an awful lot like what we've said here, Representative England said, all anybody really wants to be taught in their schools is the accurate and true representation of American and world history, and that includes America's sordid history with race. Jesus. Chris Pringle. Titanic Republican intellect. Thank you so kindly, Barbara. We got down to, what did I say, 5350? It gets more complicated now. We're down to $44.14. 10 minutes, $44.15 to go to meet the When Joe Manchin Chooses, You Loses challenge that was anonymously put forward by a dear friend of the program. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Barbara. $44.16. No, $44.14. $44.14. That's four people at $11 and some change. Four people at $11.04. How about four new subscriptions at $11.04? That'd be nice. Thank you, Barbara. 10 minutes. We'll see. And there was some good news over the weekend. Reality winner who blew the whistle on the National Security Agency, the NSA, was granted early release from prison. And she will serve the remainder of her sentence at a halfway house. You'll recall they arrested her under the Espionage Act because she leaked classified government information about what? About Russian interference in the 2016 election to reporters at The Intercept. She was then given the longest sentence ever given by a federal court for unauthorized disclosure of government information to the press. She should have a damn medal. She told us what we learned to our horror. Those godforsaken treasonous maggots, Trump himself, had been doing to sell us out to Mother Russia. Her lawyer, Allison Grinter Allen, said Reality released a document that gave us information that we needed to know at a time that we absolutely needed to know it. When you think about all the sleazy, skeevy pardons that Nitwit Nero turned out, pardoning Reality Winner should be a no-brainer for this administration, but of course, it would cause a lot of hooting and braying, and Republicans would have a sad, and so probably it won't happen. Add that to the list of other pardons that won't happen. Leonard Peltier, a political prisoner in the purest sense of the word. Yeah. Oh, and Shorty pointing out, we the people are the power. We have always had power. Let's up that voltage without delay and worth and with extreme prejudice. We got this. Never give up. Never give in. You see, giving up, that's temporary, but giving in, well, that's permanent. I'm with you. We need to build a fire in this state and in this country. I'd be more, I really am interested to hear from, the live community and the podcast, too. Is there energy for protest and demonstration and civil disobedience where you are? Because the juxtaposition between people coming out and having a good time and celebrating their freedom on Saturday at Pride versus what I saw yesterday, there were a lot of excited people, but not nearly enough. And figuring out how we get. And in the past, and it's because we had some extremely talented organizers, we got some huge, huge crowds organized against mountaintop removal. And we made progress because of that. We need that same level of talent. And again, I take Reverend Barber at his word. He said that this was the beginning, not the end. There would be more. And so just one last story to wrap up, just because sometimes science is so crazy, is so cool, and sometimes it's just so crazy. And then there's what John Stewart said. It says something about us And you remember the story from some time, years back, that our water supply is absolutely full of all manner of things. And in many instances, it's got a bunch of goddamned antidepressants in it, you know, selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors. Well, things live in that water, like crawdads, crawfish, little freshwater lobsters. And so some scientists wanted to find out what the impact of water with antidepressants in it does to various species, and they decided to have a look at the crayfish, leading to the, you know, you see a headline like this from, and this is from Agence France Press. Crayfish take more risks while on antidepressants, study shows. No, 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 it's not like the crayfish were particularly bummed out or just couldn't get out of bed in the morning or anything. They just happen to live in a world where we don't, where we put antidepressants in the water. One would think they would be happier crayfish, but apparently they're bigger risk takers. They behave, according to the paper that was published in the journal Ecosphere, they behave more boldly, and they'll come out of hiding more quickly, and they spend more time looking for food. That's because the antidepressants give them the munchies. Lead author Alexander A.J. Reisinger of the University of Florida's Institute of Food and Agricultural Sciences said, "Our study is the first to look at how crayfish respond when exposed to antidepressants at levels typically found in the streams and ponds where they live." You know, they tested the water. Oh, let's look. Yeah, gee, how much Lexapro's in this? And we don't, you know, we don't think about these things because we just go along and we live our lives. But antidepressants that are flushed directly or excreted in trace amounts wind up in the environment through leaky septic systems, water treatment plants not designed to filter them out. And Dr. Reisinger said, because they live in water, animals like crayfish are regularly exposed to trace amounts of these drugs. And, you know, when you're a crayfish, a trace amount's probably enough. Well, I'm feeling better than I've felt in years. I'm hungry, too. Wanted to know how that might be affecting them. Prozac, fluoxetine, citalopram, Celexa, and they made them go through a maze. And one of the lanes that they came out of the maze into had chemical cues for food, and the other said, hey, there's another crayfish over here. And that made them, and apparently the antidepressant made them avoid the other crayfish. Dude, I don't want to fight. But because they spent more time looking for food, that puts them in a position of being more likely to be preyed upon by eels, turtles, McConnells, various Republicans. No, it doesn't say that. America, where we have the happiest crawdads in the world. Amen. Praise Jesus. Let us pray. Oof. So we will close the program. Thank you to Steve and Georgia Stan for turning this into a not 3-hour filibobster. I appreciate that. Thank you. And it's good to be back. I miss the program when I'm not here. Even when I'm doing something useful. But this is home. I don't mean the studio. The studio is home, too, but this community is home. And I thank you for that. And hopefully we will come up with the remainder of the challenge. What did I say? $44.16. And match our anonymous challenge. If you're listening to this in podcast, that needs to happen. And if the 44.16 gets met, we'll apply it to the remaining 230. and we'll knock this down some. It's a small group of people that keep this program on the air. A small percentage of the people who listen. We need more. We really do. So that it's not so dang hard. The more, as in any endeavor, when more of us work together, the load becomes lighter. So thanks, everybody. Thanks to our Patreon and PayPal subscribers. Thank you to our a la carte contributors. Thank you so very much. Thanks to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in this long-running dialogue in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live, who, by the way, I mentioned the Adelphia Sports Bar and Grill. Brother Deacon Asa said, well, I'll be dipped. I've been to the Adelphia. Let's just say the food wasn't their strongest offering. They used to really, they used to do really good Greek stuff. I don't know. Maybe it's just slipped a little. But thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. Remember, brand new fresh Malloy on the way at 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 6 p.m. Pacific. The best place to listen to the first run of Malloy is HeadOn.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Lord, the things that Ben Birch has done to advance progressive radio cannot be overstated. Thank you, Ben. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. This would be a great time to reach out to your member of the House and ask them to co-sponsor H.R. 2073, the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act, the AIC Act. It means the world to Appalachia. It really, really does. Oh, and by the way, feel free, if you like, reach out to your senator and say, hey, why don't you introduce the AIC Act as a companion bill in the Senate? Why don't you do that? That'd be a great thing for you to do, and you'd be a hero. You'd be the person who saved Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Oh, breaking news. So much for ceasefires. Now that Bibi's gone, in a petulant fit, by the way, the new guy is off to a bang of a start. The Israelis bombed Gaza some more after Hamas used, wait for it, incendiary balloons. And that happened after the brand new Israeli government, meet the new boss, same as the old boss, gave the go-ahead for the extreme right wing in Israel to march. Yeah, that was going to work out well. Jesus. Incendiary balloons. Wonder how many children died. Well, please stay safe. Get your vaccine if you haven't already. If you can get outside, please do. Make you feel a bunch better. Remember, as Paul from Parts Unknown said, the vaccine is your last line of defense, not your first. So keep washing your hands. Keep not touching your face. Keep carrying your hand sanitizer. Keep wearing your mask as necessary and appropriate. And for God's sakes, if somebody comes up to you saying, well, I don't know what it is, but we're going to ban the teaching of that there critical race theory. That there's the happiest crawdad I think I've ever seen. Well, avoid that person like the plague.
Because they are. Later.